Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Black Food Matters, Racial Justice in the Wake of Food Justice. Edited by Hannah Garth and Ashante M. Reese. Narrated by Allison Johnson. Black Food Matters, an introduction. Ashante M. Reese and Hannah Garth. The global food system is plagued with inequities. On the one hand, the U.S. food supply is so abundant it could feed everyone in the country nearly twice over, even after exports are considered. Yet the United States Department of Agriculture, USDA, reported that in 2018, 14.3 million Americans were food insecure. The burden of food insecurity is especially felt by communities of color. In an effort to understand how race and ethnicity influence food insecurity, Anna McCormick Myers and Matthew Painter find that Black and Latinx people, regardless of immigrant status, are significantly more food insecure than foreign or U.S.-born whites, suggesting that the food system is part of a larger structure of inequity. In an effort to address both food insecurity and unequal food access, activists and scholars have turned their attention to creating an equitable food system, framing their work under the umbrella of food justice. Growing out of the environmental justice movement that is largely led by women of color, food justice has become a theoretical, methodological, and aspirational framework for re-envisioning a world in which access to healthy, affordable food is not a dream, but a reality for all. In recent years, nuanced examinations of this movement reveal that what was once characterized as a singular movement is more a collection of similar, though sometimes diverging, fragmented approaches to food inequity, resulting in varied definitions and applications of the term food justice. At minimum, food justice highlights the problems of a contemporary food system that relies heavily on undervalued labor and the quick and efficient circulation of food products, and is concerned with the unequal distribution of and access to healthy, affordable food. Robert Gottlieb and Anupama Joshi assert that food justice ensures that the benefits and risks of where, what, and how food is grown and produced, transported and distributed, and accessed and eaten are shared fairly. And as part of the process, knowing how food injustices are distributed and experienced form the basis for which a movement can grow. Many Black activists and scholars theorize and frame food inequities as a byproduct of the contestation to Black life, specifically grounding their food justice work from the starting point that just as racism produces increasing surveillance, disproportionate rates of mass incarceration, and income inequities, it also produces food inequities. Leah Penniman argues, racism is built into the DNA of the U.S. food system. Beginning with the genocidal land theft from indigenous people, continuing with the kidnapping of our ancestors from the shores of West Africa for forced agricultural labor, morphing into convict leasing, expanding to the migrant guest worker program, and maturing into its current state, where farm management is among the whitest professions, farm labor is predominantly brown and exploited, and people of color disproportionately live in food apartheid neighborhoods and suffer from diet-related illness. This system is built on stolen land and stolen labor and needs a redesign. Our food system and the inequities it produces, in other words, are the afterlife of slavery, the ways the past extends beyond a fixed position or time period to extend into the present day. In this afterlife, one in which the racial calculus devalues Black life, inequities and injustices are not accidental, but the result of deeply entrenched systemic processes. The fruit that is produced from a capitalist economic system, from which the expendability of Black life is not tertiary but central. The implications for those of us who study food is that it is not enough to simply examine race in the food system. We must also consider how the food system is part of larger structures that, by design, were never created for Black survival. In this way, food inequities are one manifestation of the afterlife of slavery. Rashid Salam Hislop connects food justice explicitly to racial justice, defining it as the struggle against racism, exploitation, and oppression taking place within the food system that addresses inequality's root causes both within and beyond the food chain. working from the premise that anti-blackness is pervasive as climate and operates as a precondition for the expendability of black lives. In her book, Black Food Geographies, Race, Self-Reliance, and Food Access in Washington, D.C., Ashante Reese argues that examining both the specificity and the mundaneness of anti-blackness opens up possibilities for us to reconsider and imagine constraint and possibility, harm and care, and destruction and community building. We frame this edited volume in similar ways to Hislop, adding the specificity of anti-blackness that Reese offers, with the hope that within the chapters we may witness seedlings of resistance and refusal. As the chapters in this volume demonstrate, we are talking about not only racial disparities that black people experience in the food system, but the conditions that produce those disparities. The contested landscape in which black people shop for, grow, distribute, and consume food is multidimensional. Redlining in housing and supermarkets, nefarious practices of discrimination and exclusionary lending, and ongoing forms of institutionalized discrimination and circuits of capital exacerbate deeply entrenched inequalities and poverty. This is the context from which many food justice movements have taken up the call to provide or fight for healthy, accessible food for all. Intermingled with these contexts, black communities maintain vibrant black food cultures that draw from black history and shift into contemporary variations. Weaving together the contexts of vibrant black food cultures and the need to incorporate racial justice into the food justice movement, Black Food Matters brings together authors who examine production, distribution, and consumption through the lens of anti-blackness to explore themes of fugitivity and disposability, the consumability of blackness and black food culture, and the everyday resistances that are produced in the making of black food geographies. Some scholars and activists have pointed to the brokenness of our food system, while others have suggested that there is nothing broken, that the inequities it produces are functions of how it should work, as the push to maximize production and consumption while devaluing labor are integral to capitalist production. This volume operates from the latter assumption. We presume that many of the solutions offered, particularly those related to combating the so-called obesity epidemic, and those that stem from the food desert framing, are antithetical to rather than supportive of black life. Rather than offer solutions to brokenness, these chapters provide some insight into how blackness is contested even within food justice work, the challenges that emerge when different perspectives of healthy emerge, or how black people imagine otherwise. In particular, the authors collectively grapple with questions of black agency and leadership, hypervisibility of black people as targets for food justice interventions, and how geography influences the particularities of how food resources and food justice efforts unfold in different spaces. We illuminate how black people are in the midst of their own struggles for justice within the mainstream food justice movement. Though food insecurity, or the threat of it, is a thread that runs throughout the chapters, one of the main arguments of this volume is that food and the fugitive practices black people employ around food comprise a lens through which we can explore anti-blackness and black life. The chapters explore individual and community values and the influence of history and the everyday ways that institutions and communities reflect an ongoing struggle to not only meet needs but affirm black life. The chapters in this volume reflect what pioneering food anthropologist Sidney Mintz urged those who research food to do: to see food as a reflection of sociopolitical relations that are much broader than what is on our plates. Even in their recognition of a food system that, by design, ensures that black people and black spaces are not adequately resourced, many of the chapters still grapple with possibility, challenging popular notions that the only way to understand black people's relationships with food and food institutions is through lack. What survives? Reading black life, refusal, and self-determination in food. In 2017, at the Young Farmers Conference held at the Stone Barns Center for Food and Agriculture in New York, Chef Nadine Nelson asked keynote speaker Mark Bittman a question After he and Ricardo Salvador finished their joint presentation on racism and land reform, how do you hold yourself accountable to communities of color and vulnerable communities, to the things you say that you aspire to change? Bittman did not directly answer her question, first saying that he did not know what she meant by hold yourself accountable to, before moving on to field additional questions. Later, North Carolina-based farmer Dallas Robinson declared that Bittman's dismissal of the question was hurtful, and that what was needed was for white men like him to share power and listen to people of color. The National Black Food and Justice Alliance, NBFJA, publicly applauded Chef Nadine and others, declaring that black and brown people have always been the life force of the food movement. From national formations created and led by black leaders, such as the National Black Food and Justice Alliance, to local formations, such as Detroit Black Community Food Security Network, groups are organizing and thus positioning themselves in rightful leadership within the food movement. Continuously portraying the leadership of the food movement almost exclusively in the body of white men is not only inaccurate and harmful, but a dated form of hegemony. This moment, albeit brief, illustrates ongoing tensions within food movements. Who has the power to name and define? Who is creating policy? In what ways are black and other people of color framed as the recipients of aid, but rarely the theorists, creators, and experts, even though there is a long history of black, indigenous, and other people of color-led community-based activism that forms the crux of contemporary food justice movements? It also calls to mind refusal as a strategy for navigating inequity, for holding white people in powerful positions accountable, and for creating everyday lives. Audra Simpson has developed the notion of refusal in the context of the anthropological study of indigenous communities as a way of pushing back against particular forms of power and sovereignty that do not align with the needs and identities of a particular group. In some cases, this includes refusing to participate in ethnographic projects or refusing definitions created by outsiders. We build upon and extend this understanding of refusal to think through the ways black communities use forms of refusal to assert what is at stake and what matters deeply in our lives. In this volume, we theorize how black food culture, whether at the level of cultivation or consumption, reflects refusals, fugitive food practices, and the desire for black self-determination. The ability to imagine, define, determine, and create sustainable worlds free of anti-blackness and its accompanying oppressions. We document the myriad ways in which the nation-state in which we live does not provide for or protect black people, and more often than not, causes direct and indirect harm. From systematically withholding financial support from black farmers, to histories of redlining and racist lending practices for black homeowners and businesses, to categorizing black neighborhoods as violent and deserts devoid of food worth eating, various state and institutional actors have contributed to the food inequities these chapters grapple with. Those who uphold black food culture, who insist on our right to grow, buy, sell, trade, and consume the foods that we are historically and culturally connected to, regardless of how other groups see these practices, are prominently featured in this volume. In an effort to examine self-determination and self-reliance, some food scholars have highlighted the ways that neoliberalism shapes the contours of food justice organizing and funding. The neoliberal turn in food studies in particular has demonstrated, for example, how access to funding and capital create opportunities and constraints for even the most radical food justice organizations, and have shown little evidence of having an effect on the root causes of food inequities. In this volume, however, we ask the question, what is possible when we root self-determination and self-reliance in cultural and historical practices that are not solely the product of neoliberal logics? Offering collective agency as a theoretical framework, Monica White argues that history and commitment to communally produced solutions are a manifestation of self-reliance and self-determination, and Reese argues that the self in these articulations is less about the individual and more about the ways the community itself can produce alternatives, though they may be limited in scope and sustainability. This is a tension we explore in this volume, as the inclination of Black communities toward forms of self-reliance and self-determination articulates more with the food sovereignty movement, which is grounded in the people's right to determine their own agricultural and food policies. For some Black communities, this turn to self-determination is not only a response to a food system that fails them, it is also built upon a long-standing distrust of the state. While efforts to take control of food production and consumption are rarely permanent solutions, in their efforts, people feel they are able to do something tangible, rather than waiting for the U.S. government to solve the food problem. In many Black communities, it has been accepted that rather than solely depending on the state to alleviate structural inequalities and violence, Black people must instead take care of our own needs, even if that includes food production and distribution, such as through informal cook shares or ride shares. This volume builds on germinal texts in the African American food canon that established the significance of food in the study of Black political, social, and cultural life. The chapters in this volume are not overly celebratory, and they acknowledge the limitations inherent in the work that each explores. At the same time, they demonstrate the possibilities that can emerge when people are not positioned as social or political risk objects, but are responding to and pushing against white supremacy in institutional and everyday ways. Considering self-reliance and self-determination and Black food cultural production, this also leads us to ask, what are the particular geographic components that factor into the production, distribution, and consumption of food in Black communities? Specifically, what additional questions does a Black geographical lens applied to food ask us to consider, and what knowledge is produced at that intersection? Each chapter in this volume grapples with these questions. Bringing together chapters that explore Black food cultural production and justice in Los Angeles, Detroit, Memphis, South Carolina, the rural South, Miami, and Washington, D.C., Black Food Matters presumes the significance of spatial food practices. Specifically, we challenge the tendency to treat Black neighborhoods and communities as blank slates in need of guidance or structure. Rather, epistemologically and methodologically, we concern ourselves with examining how a Black sense of place that does not reduce Black people or Blackness to countable objects emerges through how Black people produce, navigate, resist, and read their food landscapes. Margaret Marietta Ramirez argues that food justice organizations often overlook these Black geographies, demonstrating how deeply rooted contemporary practices are based on racialized processes dating back to the plantation. Similarly, Reese suggests that the Black food geographies that unfold are not simply a response to contemporary restraints, but are grounded in personal and communal histories as well as desires to build community. And Priscilla McCutcheon and Naya Jones turn to how these personal and communal histories intersect with an embodied experience of navigating food inequities. In their works, both McCutcheon and Jones illustrate that food access is not solely about the location of food, and food consumption is not purely about individual choice or taste. Authors in this volume all grapple with this in different ways, exploring the choices and decisions residents make to protect or change their food landscapes, alternative food distribution mechanisms, the role of legal proceedings in protecting farmland, and, as in the case of Billy Hall's and Judith Williams's chapters in particular, gentrification's role in creating the conditions under which Black food geographies are threatened. In addition, we see the chapters included here as part of a longer continuum that explores the changes in and preservation of Black food culture and institutions. For some of the chapters, this means thinking deeply about the ancestral knowledge that was brought to the Americas in the seeds and practices of those enslaved. What does that knowledge look like in the contemporary sense? What remains? As Jessica Harris and Michael Twitty have both demonstrated, Black food culture is tied to histories of enslavement and diaspora connections, and the knowledge of cultivating, processing, and preparing foods was not only brought to the Americas, but also incorporated into everyday life. Food cultures were carried in the wake of slavery, transformed by contact and hybridities that reverberated and in some cases carried over into contemporary Black food culture. Exploring enslavement and the related movement of foods and people is one way of considering how everyday food consumption patterns reflect fugitivity. Across the volume, and in particular in Williams's and Reese's chapters, we are challenged to consider the ways that people employ fugitive practices to meet their or community food needs, challenging us to consider the possibility that these practices, too, can fly under the banner of food justice. By fugitive here, we mean an ongoing refusal to accept standards imposed from elsewhere. Fugitivity, then, is a desire for and a spirit of escape and transgression of the proper and the proposed. It's a desire for the outside, for a playing or being outside, an outlaw edge proper to the now always already improper voice or instrument. Building on Tina Kamp and Audra Simpson, who both theorize refusal as a creative practice or set of practices that undermine dominant authorities and logics, Damien Sojourner argues that Black fugitivity is based on the disavowal of and disengagement from state-governed projects that attempt to adjudicate normative constructions of difference through liberal tropes of freedom and democratic belonging. Rather than being static or historical acts that happened in the past, Black fugitivity is a central and ongoing part of envisioning other ways of being and relating. In other words, Black fugitivity is, and perhaps always has been, part of the work taken up by those who survive in spite of constant attacks on Black life. These fugitivity practices, in fact, may be the reasons for survival. In this volume, we think and write about what is possible when we examine food through this lens. Appropriating Black food. Amid Black fugitivity and refusal, Black food culture has remained a source of cultural production and community building in spite of ongoing threats to its very existence. The African-American food studies canon has carefully documented the erasure of Black cooks and their culinary knowledge from the history of American food more generally. As Toni Tipton Martin demonstrates, Black cooks, usually women, were the creators of the many kinds of delicacies and traditional dishes coming out of early American kitchens. Linked to this idea, as Saidiya Hartman notes, the systematic violence needed to conscript Black women's domestic labor after slavery required locking them out of all other sectors of the labor market, a condition William Patterson described as economic genocide. Race riots, the enclosure of the ghetto, the vertical order of human life, and the forms of value and debt promulgated through emergent forms of racism, what Sarah Haley terms Jim Crow modernity, made it impossible for Black women to escape the white household. Whether under chattel slavery or as underpaid domestic labor, Black women's culinary knowledge and practices were stolen by white cookbook authors, absconded by white housewives, and absorbed into a whitewashed American cuisine, erasing the Black foundations of our food system. While authors like Tipton Martin have painstakingly demonstrated the centrality of Black cooks in our history, despite the limited number of cookbooks published by them, it is still not commonly accepted that Black culinary practices form a critical foundation of all American food culture. Furthermore, if we turn our attention to this history, we can clearly see the fallacy of the notion that Black people's food preferences and culinary practices have always been the stereotypical soul foods that Black people created as a way to make something out of nothing. Instead, we find that there is a whole lesser-known history of teaching industry and self-reliance in the kitchen, using fresh fruits and vegetables, and maintaining a variety of nutrients in Black cuisine that shunned frying or dependence upon fatback seasoning. As Psyche Williams-Forson's work shows, the devaluation of Black foodways and pigeonholing of it into one narrow type of food is a common misconception built upon the clichés and stereotypes of advertisers who portrayed Black people as dim-witted, incapable, and useful only as the docile servant who is always ready to serve. While consumption is key, Black food culture is also deeply intertwined with global systems of food production and distribution. Indeed, one troublesome narrative of Black foodways is that the foods we eat were the trash and scraps that white people threw at us, and we made something out of nothing. While that can be an uplifting story of overcoming adversity, a deeper look at Black food culture tells us that it is simply not true. The culinary and agricultural knowledge of Black people, some of which was stolen and appropriated, was fundamental to the economic development of the United States, and further supported the global economic dominance of European colonizing countries for centuries. Black people were brought to the Americas with extensive knowledge of cooking and agriculture, and came together to produce a rich diasporic Black culture. Not only have Black people been cultivating, processing, and preparing Black food for hundreds of years, but this quintessential Black knowledge also forms the basis of many cuisines thought to be just American, where Blackness has been erased, such as Southern food. Still, while Black knowledge and skill have long been key to Black food culture, oppressive and restrictive systems of food distribution have hampered and limited food access and threatened Black food culture. Amid the many Black cultural forms that are celebrated, commoditized, and highly sought after by Black and non-Black people alike, such as music, clothing styles, hairstyles, ways of speaking, and so on, Black food cultures span the range of popular acceptance, from being devalued to seeing a renaissance in cities like Oakland. By turning our attention to the richness of Black food culture across the diaspora and its history, we can help illuminate how Blackness is so much more than merely making something out of the scraps of white folks, more than histories of shucking and jiving as Black hands produced massive amounts of corn. That said, Black people in the United States and the broader African diaspora have been incredibly adept at responding to and improving on the conditions of inequity in which so many Black people live. This ability to make and build Black communities in this way is a strength, and not merely the outgrowth of whiteness or the use of what is rejected by white people. Black food culture is in fact the inverse, and Blackness is a foundation upon which American food culture was built. While all kinds of people consume and enjoy foods that are culturally Black, the appropriation of those foods means that members of a dominant or privileged group in society adopt or lay claim to the production of and profits from Black food culture. This sometimes leads to stereotypes that are entrenched in the marketing of some foods. As Williams Forson details, images of the Black cook, servant, slave, and mammy have been used by large corporations to sell food products since at least the late 19th century. For instance, in the 1880s, Aunt Jemima materialized as a product of commercial advertising inspired by blackface routines. These kinds of advertisements draw from imagined docile Black, often maternal figures, equate simple with Blackness, and disparage Black intelligence and culinary skills, while simultaneously erasing the Black contribution to American food. The brief history we detail here is tied up with our deliberate move to use Black food culture in this volume, rather than African-American food culture. We use Black in multiple ways to indicate Black people, those who are the descendants of African slaves brought to the United States against their will, and those who claim other ties to the African diaspora, such as through the Black Caribbean. We also engage Blackness here as a theoretical concept and political stance. Drawing on W.E.B. Du Bois, Cedric Robinson and Elizabeth Robinson argue that Black people did not always exist in the Americas since the slave trade. They assert the Negro was in place. That is, his docility, ignorance, bestiality, childlike inferiority, that was in place. But a strata was emerging in conflict with that to contest it. For Du Bois, making a claim on Black identity was taking a strong stance against the degradation of Black people. The assertion of Blackness, the naming of Black people, was staking a claim that we are a people, we have achieved cultures, We have left a mark on the world. We have a past, and we can have a future. Black sovereignty.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?